Welcome to True Crime and Red Wine. We're your hosts, Britton Polk
and Leslie Winsman. If you found us, you can expect some true crime,
rad mysteries,
definitely some murder,
and you guessed it, red wine.
We're just two best friends with a true crime obsession, so pour yourself a glass, sit back, and enjoy.
There may be some graphic content and explicit language, so put in the AirPods and let's get to it.
Guys, we've missed you!
So much!
November was a nightmare month for the both of us.
Okay, like, we can't even recap it because some of it was personal, some of it was family, some of it was...
I had a psycho trying to mess with me, so my mental space was taken up, and now I don't have to worry about it, so...
And what was mine? I mean, obviously... Oh, mine was all the Be the Match stuff.
Yes!
Yeah, that was mostly mine.
Yeah!
Where I've... Well, I can't say anything bad about... The organization is great. I can't go into too much detail.
No, you can't. It's just... You just already have heart condition.
Yeah.
So
we had to take a break.
It was, and then like holidays, and of course like the old Rona just like came back with a vengeance. And
yep. So now we're back.
So we're back, and we're so sorry.
And we missed it. You. God, we missed it so much. Also, I don't think I'm... Oh, I did drink a lot of wine.
Cheater, cheating whore.
It wasn't Thanksgiving.
You just tried to lie to my face.
I was like, did I drink wine during that entire time? But I only drank wine once, but it was during Thanksgiving, and it was like 3 bottles.
Wow.
Not by myself.
You lived through
you
it.
You know I would have been in bed. Like, that would never happen. No. So, yeah, we're glad to be back. It's, what is it, December 10th? I don't even know how long we were gone.
The last one we did was our Halloween.
What?
Yes.
6 weeks?
Yes.
Oh.
It's been a bad 6 weeks.
I think everybody missed us, too.
I've missed us.
We have had a lot of people tell us they missed us.
Yes, so many. And so we're sorry, we're back.
Yes.
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 Jill?
It feels like we're starting over from like square one.
It's like your first time.
I know.
I actually felt like that when I started writing up my story.
Like, you feel like an idiot. Like, I don't know.
Where did these things go?
Well, you have a really interesting current event one.
Yes. Like right now, currently, don't even actually know the full ending.
I mean, I can't believe I didn't hear about this at all. Yeah. Until you told me, and then I didn't research anything because I wanted to hear it
good.
From you.
Yeah.
And you've probably heard of mine.
Okay.
But it's a weird one.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I don't know. Mine is creepy.
Okay.
Yours is current.
Yeah.
Do you want to rock, paper, scissors?
Yep.
Okay. Do you do rock, paper, scissors, shoot?
Yes.
Okay, ready?
I win, too.
Oh.
Just so you know how I play this game. It's just, I win.
So we don't have to play?
Yeah, I win.
Oh, okay. We'll see about that.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Oh, I won.
Fine.
Well, I don't know what that means. Does that mean I go first?
It means you pick.
Okay, I'll just go first. Okay.
This is on.
Yeah. Supplies.
You should give me a warning. I could have said all kinds of bad things.
Wait, did you? I'm just kidding.
I don't know.
What's our wine tonight?
So, after our very long break, I decided to pick out the pretty one.
It's so pretty.
Isn't it pretty?
Yeah.
So, this is called Chocolate Box. It's a 2015. It says it's a pure wine.
Yeah, she is. Not with that face.
Like, what does that mean?
I don't know, but she looks like a floozy.
Girl, you hoe. You're not pure.
Oh, chocolat.
Chocolat. Okay, so it's from South Australia. It's a cab. It says, ripe cassis fruit with lifted minty truffle chocolate.
Okay, I don't taste mint, truffle, or chocolate.
Okay, here's what's funny. I do. Earlier, when I think I've had more than you two, though.
Yeah, I'm still, like, on my first baby glass.
Yeah, and I just poured my second glass. I actually got kind of a weird minty flavor earlier, and I looked at the label, like, what the hell? I've never had minty flavor.
God, you're so refined. So I just taste grapes. Fermented ones.
Right. Okay. Minty truffle chocolate in a subtle vanilla oak finish.
I taste the oak.
This one, I almost believed you. This wine is drinking beautifully now, but has the structure to develop over many years. This wine for me, or maybe it's because we haven't had wine in a long time. Well, I haven't. Cheater. I'm just kidding. Actually, I did have wine. This wine is delicious.
It is good.
I am super happy with this.
Yeah, it gave me goosies when I like first tasted it.
But for a cat, I don't feel like it's like a big, like, you know, punch in the mouth.
Yeah. No, I like her.
I don't know what's wrong with me. I just...
Like all the time or this moment?
Oh, that's a good point. Me.
Again, did you take your meds?
No.
I'm sweaty. I put on my shirt because I was chilly.
Really? My feet are... Or maybe I'm nervous? No, I'm... I don't know.
Were you about to say you're hot? So, have you heard the story of Elisa Lamb?
Yes, and I actually, that was one of the ones I was thinking about doing for Halloween.
What?
Because it's so creepy.
Yeah, the video?
Yes.
Okay, so I kind of outline in here like the video, but we have to post it.
Yes.
You have to see it to get the full effect.
Yes.
So did you read up on like the whole story?
I did.
Oh, damn it. Okay.
Sorry. I even watched the little, those little like quick video things about it too. Like all the conspiracies.
And I got some of them, but I didn't want to like go too far down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So, okay. So mine is about Elisa Lamb. Forgive me if I call her Eliza, because when I read this, I see the name Eliza.
Okay. That's close.
But her name is Elisa. Okay. I should probably not mess it up. She's dead. That would be rude. Okay. What? That's rude, right? You just get it right.
Just give yourself that correction.
Here, I'll just say Elisa Lamb, and we'll like
and you can
stick
just dub
that,
that in every single time.
Yes, it'll sound very natural. It'll sound like this: on January 26, 2013,
Elisa Lamb.
All right.
It's like one of those like when you need like to have somebody call you back.
Yeah. Like, yep.
Leslie Winston.
My. Your car. Every time I'm like, is someone saying my name? And it's your car.
Bretton Paul.
Wait, was that Borat slash minivan? He lives inside of you.
No, he really does. He definitely takes up residency.
Dallas just mentioned, we were watching, it was like previews for a Netflix show or something, and it was Borat. And Dallas was like, didn't Leslie say she liked that? And I was like, I don't know. But also, I don't doubt it. But it was funny because he was like,
yep.
He knows it's you.
I'm part of the family.
You are.
So we were talking about getting a cat. Sorry, I'm like, and hijacked your story
here.
So we were talking about, you know, getting a cat. We were looking at different cats. And there's this one I wanted to rescue, and it's a Russian blue.
Oh, yes.
And I was like, yes. And then we get to give it the Russian name.
You have to name it Borat.
I wanted to name it Svedka.
Oh,
like my vodka.
That's so appropriate.
Candace was like, no, you cannot.
The teachers would love hearing
right.
about your cat.
Svedka. I'm like, oh my god.
But the teachers would probably think Borat was funny. Because like the kids have no idea what that is, and the teachers will be like,
very nice.
And the kids will be like, why is that so funny?
I don't understand.
I feel like that's a good idea. You should really do that.
Yeah, if I find another Russian blue, it's getting a real weird name.
I'll start looking for you.
Alright, go back to your story. I apologize.
Alright. Okay, let's do it. On January 26, 2013, Elisa Lamb arrived in L.A. She had just come by Amtrak train from San Diego, and she was headed to Santa Cruz as she was on a little girl solo trip around the West Coast, which to me sounds bizarre.
That but sounds like hell, like a solo trip?
But no, that's because you. I need people.
Yeah.
Like, that I need to communicate.
I don't go out to eat alone.
Oh, could you imagine me trying to navigate a city on my own?
Oh, God.
There's no way. I can't even get out of a neighborhood by myself without GPS. So, yeah, she was taking a little solo trip. The trip was supposed to be a getaway from her studies at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, where she was originally from. Her parents were immigrants from Hong Kong, and they had opened a restaurant in the area, Canada. God, I had to think about where Vancouver was.
Canada land? Canada.
Canada. And she was raised there from birth, which was in 1991. So naturally, she's a young girl, and her family had been really nervous about her traveling by herself. But Elisa was super determined to go it alone and do it. Like, I guess, conquest kind of thing. So as a compromise, which I feel is super reasonable as a mother, Elisa made sure to check in with her parents every day of the trip. Like, that was their deal. If you're going by yourself, you have to call every day. Let us know you're safe.
Okay.
So she did. Like, she, I think, I did not write this down. I think she left on the 22nd of January.
Okay.
She was traveling from, like, San Diego to L.A., Santa Cruz, like all those places that you would go if you were taking a West Coast trip. So she made the phone calls every day, and that's why once.
Starting already, I'm sniffing.
Are you?
God. I haven't done it all day.
You probably do it all day.
Maybe I do. You don't notice it. I'm just only noticing it now.
You're just a cokehead. It's fine. I'm just kidding. She's not. That's what I think about.
I think I just get, you know, like on Superstar, like the armpit thing. I think we start recording and I just get like a runny nose.
You should just go ahead and stick toilet paper.
I do that sometimes. We do both. But like, I will stick it in one of my nostrils. It's not a nose hole. It's a nostril, by the way.
Did I say nose hole?
Yes, you did, you weirdo.
I can't not.
No, but sometimes I like stick toilet paper in there. Like, I've just been married too long.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll just like be watching TV and Kenna's like, that's disgusting. And you're like, and I'll have like a little cup and I'll just like, you know, take it out and like get the next one and like, you know.
Yeah, because they get saturated.
Right. And so then I'll have like a whole cup full of them. Kenna's like, gross.
Well,
you'll still want some later. Shut up. Yes. You're fine.
You've been wearing your same socks for a week, so you're gross. Do you need to get all your sniffs
out? Get out of my face.
Your sniffs?
You're going to get my sniffs for me?
Out of your face?
That's going to be real I'm not, gross.
I don't know how this is going to go. Okay. Where was it? Okay. So she made her phone calls. That's why when Elisa didn't call on January 31st, the day she was scheduled to check out of her LA hotel, the Cecil, her parents were like, ugh. Where's my baby?
You are just cracking yourself up.
I just have ugh written.
Just to make sure you hit that.
Ugh. Where's my baby? So her parents were obviously super concerned because she has been diligent. And they eventually contacted the LAPD and the police searched the premises of the Cecil but couldn't find Elisa. Anywhere. I told you. Oh my gosh.
Should I smack your hand every time you do it?
Yeah. Okay. Or just in the face, just backhand me. All right, so Elisa visited the San Diego Zoo and posted photos of her on her social media. And on January 26th is when she actually arrived in Los Angeles. So after 2 days, she had checked into the famous Cecil Hotel near downtown Skid Row, which is sort of Shade City, like known for drugs. And so if you don't know what Skid Row is, though, like it's not
skid marks in your underwear.
It's not skid marks. You're right. You live with so many boys. Oh, my gosh. It's just like lots of drugs. There's kind of crime. Apparently, the Cecil is actually not that expensive to stay at. So anyone who could scrounge up enough money to stay there could. So anyways, that's neither here nor there. So now, in case anyone is wondering why the Cecil is famous, as a true crime addict, I'm surprised that I didn't know these things. So I did dig a little deeper to figure out all of this stuff. Now I'm like, I'm on a Cecil series. Like, I'm going to do all the Cecil stories.
I have a fun fact that you're not going to know about it, but ooh, tell
yay.
Me.
Yep. Okay, let's see. I wrote some down. So since opening its doors in 1927, the Cecil Hotel has been plagued by 16 different non-natural deaths and unexplained paranormal events. The most famous death associated with the hotel was the 1947 murder of actress Elizabeth Short, a.k.a.
Black Dahlia.
The Black Dahlia, who was reportedly seen drinking at the hotel bar just a few days before her murder. In 1985, best year ever, because I was born, Richard Ramirez, also known as the Night Stalker, lived on the top floor of the hotel during his killing spree.
Mm-hmm.
The story goes that after a murder, Ramirez would dump his bloody clothes outside of the hotel and return half naked. Back then, the hotel was in such disarray that Ramirez's nude stunt didn't really surprise anybody.
They're like, yep, crackhead,
it's like,
you know,
everyone's Skid Row. It's whatever. 6 years later, another murderous patron moved into the hotel. Austrian serial killer Jack Unterweger. I don't.
Huh.
Yeah. Who earned the nickname the Vienna Strangler. I don't know about him. I need to look at that. And then in 1964, Goldie Osgood, the pigeon lady of Pershing Square, was raped and murdered in her hotel room at the Cecil, and that crime has never been solved. There have also been suicides, one of which also killed a pedestrian outside the front entrance of the hotel. And after recent renovations, they tried to market it, like, market the Cecil as a boutique hotel, but, like, its bad reputation just still lingers.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's creepy and has bad juju. It's not a boutique hotel. So, okay, wait. So, I'm about to get back to my story, so tell me the fun facts.
Okay, you don't watch American Horror Story.
But no, I have it in here!
Okay, let me just stop. Let me just mind my business and just listen.
God. I actually have written in here at the end, you probably already know this, but...
Yeah.
Yes, I will get there.
Okay.
Okay, so back to the Cecil in current times, in the 2000s. So, like I said, you know, Elisa went missing. The cops came and searched, all of that jazz. But, like, kind of what happened at the hotel starts with her checking in. So, like, she was on her solo trip, trying to save money, probably. She's just a college student at British Columbia. So, she originally was going to stay in, like, a hostel kind of room. So, with other people, just a shared room. It was on the hotel's fifth floor. However, her roommates complained to the hotel staff about her certain odd behavior, and, like, they didn't want to stay with her anymore. So they moved her out of her room after just 2 days and just were like, here, here's a private room to yourself because you're, like, creeping everybody out. So she had been diagnosed in the past with bipolar disorder and depression, and she had been prescribed 4 medications. Wellbutrin, holla. Lamictal?
Okay.
I don't know that one. Seroquel and Effexor to treat her disorders. And according to her family, who supposedly kept her mental illness a secret, she had no history of suicidal ideas or attempts, although one report claimed she had previously gone missing for a brief period of time. And I know some cultures are different and people are different, but I hate that her family was... I don't know, ashamed or embarrassed, but that it had to be, like, a big secret, you know, because I'm sure that's really hard. But I know that we're living in a really great time where it's not a big deal anymore, and everybody just talks about it. Like, eat your pills. I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in the mid, I don't know how you would say this, the mid-2010s? Mid-2010? I don't know. Elisa began a blog named Ether Fields, and over the next 2 years, she posted pictures of models and fashionable clothing and accounts of her life, particularly her struggle with mental illness. So she was out and about and proud about it, you know, like, yes, queen, sharing the journey. So then in January 2012, in a blog post, Elisa wrote about a relapse that started at the beginning of her current school term, and it forced her to drop several classes, leaving her feeling... quote, so utterly directionless and lost. She titled her post, quote, you're always haunted by the idea that you're wasting your life, after a quotation from novelist Chuck Palahniuk.
Palahniuk, shut up. You've never read any of his books?
There's not a C in his name.
Isn't it Palahniuk?
There's not a C. It's Palahniuk. What if it's like Brett Favre?
I've read so many of his books. I went through, like, a phase where I really loved him. They're all just, like, real weird.
Well, you're kindred spirits then.
Well, now I need to look them up. Fight Club style.
Ooh.
They're real strange.
I'll read them. So she was worried that her transcript would look really suspicious with so many withdrawals that she wouldn't be able to go back and, like, be able to attend graduate school. So she's going through, like, a really hard time.
Yeah.
At this point in her life. Like, she's just feeling super lost, super depressed. She's in the middle of a relapse, all of this stuff. Which is why her solo trip to the West Coast was completely warranted. Like, yes, girl, take time for yourself. So, basically, the trip was a break from university life and just to take time for herself and for some fun. Well deserved. Okay, so the hotel staff who saw Elisa on January 31st said she was alone. This is the day she disappeared.
Yeah.
Outside of the hotel, Kate Orphan, who's the manager of a nearby bookstore, oddly called The Last Bookstore... I know. She was the only person who recalled seeing her that day, I guess, outside of the hotel. And she said that Elisa, shit, was outgoing, very lively, and very friendly, and that she was getting gifts to take home to her family.
Like, maybe manic?
Like, yeah, maybe. Well, no, she said she was, like, normal and, like, talkative and was like, yeah, I want to get someone this. And it, but she had, like, all intentions of returning home. So when you hear about what happened and some of the theories, you have to remember, like, she, at this point, had plans to return. So we know her family called the police after they didn't hear from her on that January 31st. So the police came and they searched to the extent that they legally could. So apparently the Cecil has something like 700 rooms. So you can't search that many rooms anyways, but legally they could only search her room. And then they brought dogs in to like sniff out, you know, see if they could find her scent, including like the hallways, the fire escapes, the roof, her room, all of those things. Sergeant Rudy Lopez said, but we didn't search every room. We could only do that if we had probable cause to believe that a crime was committed. And at this point, she's just a missing person.
Yeah.
On February 6th, a week after Elisa had been seen, the LAPD decided that more help was needed. Flyers with her image were posted in the neighborhood and online, and it brought the case to the public's attention through the media. And then the video footage came out. It confused everyone who saw it, including myself.
It's horrifying. And
yourself.
Oh, I will never forget it.
And people were obsessed.
So confusing.
It's insane.
Yes.
So the LAPD released a video of her last known sighting, which was taken of her in the Cecil's elevators. And the video literally drew worldwide attention from like here, Canada, China, everywhere, because her behavior in it is so freaking bizarre. So in the clip, okay, so I'm going to tell you, for anyone who hasn't seen it, what I think it was like 2 minutes and 30 seconds, what it looked like. But you have to go watch it. Just look up Elisa Lam
elevator.
Like you'll find, it's the first thing that's going to pop up. Okay, in the clip, the camera at one of the elevator's cap rear corners, so it's looking down from the ceiling.
Yeah, it's like the top
yes.
left corner.
You're like looking in, so you can see inside the elevator and you can see the elevator doors and into the hall. So that's where this is positioned.
But like not out in the hall, so it's pretty much just like what's right in front
right
of the elevator.
Right in front. Yeah. Yes. And it's kind of grainy and the timestamp at the bottom is obscured and at some points the footage is pixelated. Like it's
yeah.
It's surveillance. So, Elisa enters wearing a red zippered hooded sweatshirt over a gray t-shirt with black shorts and sandals. She enters from the left and goes to the control panel. She pushes several buttons, like, if not all of them, like, to all of the floors, which is already very strange. And then, after a few seconds, oh, and then she steps to the back corner. So, she pushes the buttons and she steps all the way to the back, and then the door doesn't close. So, she steps up to it. She leans forward, so her head is the only thing through the door. Like, her body's still in the elevator. Her head is peeking out the door. And she looks to one side, and then she looks to the other side. And then she, like, quickly steps back in.
But it's, like, a frantic looking, too.
Yeah, but it's, like, what is she? Is she looking for somebody?
But she looks, like, scared, too.
Yeah. And then she, like, really quick steps in and goes back to the side wall and then moves into the corner, into the corner by the control panel, which is by the door, so it looks like she's trying to crouch in the corner, like she's trying to hide if someone is walking by. Okay, so the door stays open again. I don't know why the hell this door isn't closing. So she walks back to it and stands in the doorway, leaning on the side. Suddenly, in an almost like childish motion is what I perceived it as, she like hops out into the hallway with both feet, like doesn't step out, like hops out. She looks around, takes a step to her side, then steps backwards into the elevator, looks to the side, then back out. Then she steps sideways again, and for a few seconds, she's almost visibly behind the wall on the outside. So she's, like, gone back. So she looks terrified looking out, but then she goes back outside, and, like, she gets out of the elevator and steps to the side. Like, it's just really all so strange. The door still remains open, so we're getting this footage. Then, on the outside of the elevator, you can see her right arm goes up to her head, and then she turns to re-enter the elevator, putting both hands on the side of the door. Then she goes to the control panel, presses many more buttons, some more than once, and then returns to the wall that she had come to the elevator from, putting both hands over her ears again briefly as she walks back to the section of the wall that she had been standing against before. So basically, it's a bunch of just erratic, in and out, sidewalls, corners, like covering her head, covering her ears. It's all really strange. So then she turns to her right and she begins rubbing her forearms together. She waves her hands out to her sides with palms flat and fingers outstretched, which it almost looks like, you know, when you're pissed and you're like talking to somebody and you're like using your hands and your fingers are stretched out. That's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And it looks like she's talking to somebody when she's doing this to someone in the hall. And this can all be seen through the door, which remains open. Then she backs to the wall again and walks away to the left and it finally closes. So she's not in the elevator anymore. She has stepped out and walked away, and the elevator finally closes its doors. So no one else appears in the footage during the entire clip. It appears that she was alone during all of this odd back and forth. Okay, so you have to go watch this video. The video was reposted widely from Canada to the US all the way to China, and people found it super unsettling to watch because of how completely strange she was behaving. So several theories evolved to explain her actions. One was that Elisa was trying to get the elevator car to move in order to escape someone who was pursuing her. Others suggested that she might be under the influence of ecstasy or some other party drug, but none was detected in her body. When her bipolar disorder became known, the theory was that she was having a psychotic episode. Other viewers argued that the video had been tampered with before being made public. Besides the obscuring of the timestamp, they claimed parts of the video slowed down and nearly a minute of footage had been discreetly removed. This could have been done simply to protect the identity of someone who otherwise would have been in the video but had little or nothing to do with the case, or to conceal evidence if Elisa's disappearance and death had been the result of a criminal act. So I don't know if they put those words out saying, yes, we did that, or if it was like, these are speculations to maybe why they did that. So I don't know. So during the search for Elisa, guests at the hotel began complaining about low water pressure. Some later claimed that their water was colored black and had a foul and unusual taste. Ugh. Yeah. So on the morning of February 19th, while the water tanks were being inspected because of the complaints, Elisa's body was found in one of the four 1,000-gallon tanks that provided water to the guest rooms, a kitchen, and a coffee shop.
God, I wonder if people got sick.
Okay. So the tank was drained and cut open since its maintenance hatch was too small to accommodate equipment needed to remove her body. On February 21st, the LAPD's... Nope. On February 21st, the Los Angeles... Nope. On
Please leave this in.
Okay, fine. On February 21st, the Los Angeles coroner's office, not the corona office... Oh my gosh.
It's taken over everything.
Oh, I was thinking beer, but also coronavirus. Oh, okay, so the coroner's office issued a finding of act...
You're pretty.
Okay, here we go. On February 21st, the Los Angeles coroner's office issued a finding of accidental drowning with bipolar disorder as a significant factor. The full coroner's report released in June stated that Elisa's body had been found naked. Clothing similar to what she was wearing in the elevator video was found floating in the water, coated in a sand-like particulate. They do not elaborate on that. I don't even know what that means. I mean, I know what it means, but, like, don't know what it was. Her watch and room key were also found with her. Elisa's body was moderately decomposed and bloated. Okay, so this is, like, sad. So just bear. We read worse things, but, you know. It was mostly greenish with some marbling evident on the abdomen and skin separation evidence. There was no evidence of physical trauma, sexual assault, or suicide. Toxicology tests, incomplete because not enough of her blood was preserved, showed traces consistent with the prescription medication found among her belongings, the ones that she takes, and then some non-prescription drugs such as Sinotab and ibuprofen. A very small quantity of alcohol was present, but no other recreational drugs. The investigation...
Yes.
Oh, my God. Look at... I haven't even had half a glass of this wine. The investigation had determined how Elisa died, but did not offer an explanation as to how she got into the tank in the first place.
Okay, I have to just...
Yeah.
I'm really immature, but every single time you say tank, I keep thinking you're going to say taint every single...
I'm not.
Have you seen my face? No. What's wrong with me?
What was that one? The Oscar Pistorius one where you made me say toilet? instead of toilets. So, no, I'm not saying taint, in case anyone's hearing that. I
keep thinking you're going to say taint every single time. It was time.
A tank with a K. So, the doors and stairs that access the hotel's roof are locked, with only the staff having passcodes and keys, and any attempt to force them open would supposedly have triggered an alarm. However, the hotel's fire escape could have allowed her to bypass these security measures if she or someone who might have accompanied her there had known that fact. A video made by a Chinese user after Elisa's death and posted to the internet showed that the hotel's roof was easily accessible via the fire escape and that two of the lids on the tanks were open. Which sounds weird. Like,
they're just open?
And like, when rats and stuff get in there? I don't know. But the openings to the water tanks are 10 feet up. That's real high.
That's real high.
And they require a ladder to reach them, but none were around the night that Elisa entered the water tank.
She scaled the side of a 10-foot water tank by herself.
I don't know. Was she by herself?
What?
Yeah. So 10 feet, 1,000-gallon tank, no ladder. The lid to the tank was also not hinged, leading some to wonder how the lid was closed if she got in of her own accord. Yeah. Because the lid was back on it.
Just wanted to put the lid back on.
Mm-hmm. Police dogs that searched through the hotel for Elisa, you know, the ones from earlier, the ones that searched even on the roof, they didn't find any trace of her up there or, like, any scent, but they did not search near the water tanks. Which, also, can you imagine being the people searching up there and then, like, weeks later being like, oh my God, she was up there the whole time.
Sorry.
Yeah. So theories about Elisa's behavior in the elevator video did not stop with her death. Some, like I said before, argued that she was attempting to hide from a pursuer, perhaps someone untimely responsible for her death. Some proponents of the theory that she was under the influence of illicit drugs are not dissuaded by their absence on the toxicology screens because they suggested that they might have broken down during like the decomposition process in the tank. Yeah, it's like
3 weeks.
Yeah. Or that she might have been taking a rare cocktail of who knows what that they weren't actually searching for with toxicology.
Wow.
Because that's a thing, too.
Yeah.
The autopsy report and its conclusions have also been questioned. For instance, it does not say what the results of the rape kit and fingernail kit were, or even if they were processed. The coroner just said they didn't find any, like, sexual trauma.
Wow.
It also records subcutaneous pooling in Elisa's anal area, which some observers suggested was a sign of sexual abuse. However, one pathologist has noted that could have also been from the bloating in the course of the body's decomposition.
Okay.
Also, her rectum was prolapsed, so don't know how that happens or if that's part of the decomposition process. Even the coroner...
I definitely have never heard that.
No, I know.
Like, I feel like we would know that.
But also, like, I feel like we don't hear a lot of things about drownings, like what the bodies look like after drownings. Like, I wonder if that happens if you were in water too long.
Your rectum just comes out of your butt?
I don't know.
I really feel like that would be something disgusting.
I know. I've never ever heard that. So, that did happen.
Like, that is such a visual.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. That's a lot.
So even the coroner's pathologist appeared to be ambivalent about their conclusion that Eliza's death was accidental. Soon after the toxicology report came out, amateur sleuths, like us, began poring over any information they could find in hopes of solving the mystery behind her death. For example, one summary of Eliza's toxicology report was posted online by a Reddit sleuth with an obvious interest in medicine. The breakdown pointed out 3 key observations.
Oh, I'm excited.
1. Lamb took at least 1 antidepressant that day. 2, she had taken her 2nd antidepressant and mood stabilizer recently, but not on that day. Oh, and 3, Lamb had not taken her antipsychotic recently. So these conclusions suggested that Elisa, who had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder and depression, may not have been taking her meds properly. It's an important finding to note, given that the use of antidepressants to treat bipolar disorder can risk inducing manic side effects if done without caution.
Like shopping, like I said. Yeah. Getting all happy, being all friendly. You went on a solo trip.
I shop a lot when I'm on vacation. I buy stupid things.
You are very happy and perky. you would never go on a trip alone. I'm saying this shows that, like, you're, like, a solo person, and then you're, like, super friendly.
Yeah. Yeah, like, not consistent.
Yeah, that doesn't sound...
So some sleuths have understandably latched onto this detail and suggested it was likely an explanation behind her strange behavior in the elevator. So that she was manic and she was almost having like a little psychotic break in the elevator. So since her death, her blog has been updated, presumably through Tumblr's Q option, which allows posts to automatically publish themselves when the user is away. That's creepy.
That's really creepy. What, like an invasion?
Everyone knows she is... dead.
Yeah.
And it's still posting, or is it? I don't know.
Ooh.
Her phone was not found with her body or in her hotel room, and it has been assumed that it was stolen at the time around her death. By whom? I don't know.
Okay.
There's so many questions. Whether the continued updates on her blog were facilitated by the theft of her phone, the work of a hacker, or through the Q is not known, nor is it known whether the updates are related to her death. Which I was like, somebody get me Tumblr's phone number and we'll just call and ask. How hard is that to, like, verify?
Right.
That should not be...
Like, don't they have a little, like, IP? Like, I'm stupid with technology. Like,
and, like, little... we know that.
Yeah, like, you know, you can track the little IP thing and see...
Don't they watch, like, CSI?
Come on, guys.
Come on. It takes, like, 5 seconds to get DNA. Right? So in September of that year, Eliza's parents filed the wrongful death suit, claiming that the hotel failed to inspect and seek out hazards in the hotel that presented an unreasonable risk of danger to Eliza and other hotel guests.
It was on the roof.
Yeah, well, so that's what they said. But they were seeking unspecified damages and burial costs, so I don't know how much they were really trying to get. The hotel argued it could not have been reasonably foreseen that Eliza might have entered the water tanks, and that since it remained unknown how she got into the water tank, no liability could be assigned for failing to prevent that. The hotel's lawyer argued that the hotel had no reason to think that someone would be able to get into one of their water tanks. Like, they're 10 feet high. Okay, based on court statements from the hotel's maintenance staff, the hotel's argument is not entirely far-fetched. Santiago Lopez.
Oh.
I know. It sounds very like Rico Suave. He was the first to find her body.
Hmm.
And he described in detail how much effort he had to exert to just find her body. Lopez said that he took the elevator to the 15th floor of the hotel before walking up the staircase to the roof. Then he had to first turn off the rooftop alarm and climb up on the platform where the hotel's four water tanks were located. Finally, he had to climb another ladder to get to the top of the main tank. Only after all of that did he notice something unusual.
So there was a ladder to the main tank, just not the others?
No. So you had to, like, take a ladder to get into the tanks.
Okay, so you had to bring yours.
Yes. He said, I noticed the hatch to the main water tank was open, and I looked inside and saw an Asian woman lying face up in the water approximately 12 inches from the top of the tank.
Face up? Can you imagine opening that water tank?
How
horrifying.
I would fall backwards off of the ladder.
Like, would you ever get that out of your
head? No. Oh my gosh, he has to have, like, night terrors. Like, it creeps me out to, like, make up that vision in my head. Like, I can't imagine.
I'm just picturing the ring for
something. Yes, yeah. I know. Yeah,
that's real creepy.
Yep. Okay. So, Creep City, all of that, and they were like, it's not reasonable that the hotel was responsible. So in 2015, the suit was dismissed.
Yeah.
Okay, so in popular culture. Okay. The circumstances of Eliza's death have been compared to the plot elements in the 2005 horror film Dark Water. Now remember, this all happened in 2013. Okay. So Dark Water was in 2005. In that film, a mother and daughter move into a rundown apartment building. A dysfunctional elevator and discolored water gushing from the building's faucets eventually lead them to the building's rooftop water tank, where they discover the body of a girl who had been reported missing from the building a year earlier.
What? I've never seen that.
I know, me either. I didn't even look it up. We gotta Goog that.
Creep.
So 8 years before, it's basically the same thing.
I wonder if she watched that movie.
Or if someone did, that was...
Yikes.
Yeah. So then, to add salt to the family's wounds, TV took over this bizarre, fascinating, and unsolved case. It has inspired pop culture adaptations like Ryan Murphy's American Horror Story Hotel, which I'm sure you've seen.
Mm.
I knew. I read that and I was like, Leslie has watched it.
Yep. It was one of my favorite seasons.
So it said, that during a press conference for the show, Murphy stated that the new season, quote, was inspired by a surveillance video from a Los Angeles-based hotel that surfaced 2 years ago. The footage showed a girl in an elevator who was never seen again. Okay, like, just go ahead and say her name. This doesn't happen every day. An obvious reference to Elisa Lam and her bizarre episode in the elevator. Then in May 2013, yeah, like that, like, soon after.
Yeah, 3 months. Mm-hmm. No, 4 months.
No, well, wait, math? Yes, four. An episode called Watershed aired as the year's season finale to the series Castle. Did you watch that?
No.
Oh,
it's a he's good like a show. Detective.
Yeah, right? And yeah, he's really cute. That. Like, not hot, but like, he's adorable. So in Watershed, the main duo pursue leads in the death of a young woman found dead in the rooftop water tank of the Cedric Hotel in Manhattan.
Wait, did you say it came on TV for the first time? Well, don't they film like a year before, though?
Well, I would say yes, but I don't know. Like, it's almost too similar.
Yeah.
And the way that instead of the Cecil, it was the Cedric Hotel. Among the evidence is a surveillance video of a woman taken in an elevator.
Oh.
Ultimately, she is found to have been posing as a prostitute in order to investigate another hotel guest. That is not relevant. another ABC series, one of my favorites, How to Get Away with Murder.
No. Oh, we don't watch, like, sitcoms.
It's not a sitcom. Well,
we don't watch, like, whenever.
Oh, so good. So it had a similar storyline. Over a series of flashbacks, it's revealed that a sorority girl missing at the start of the season was murdered and that her body has been hidden in the water tank on the roof of the sorority house.
Well, similarly, never watch it now.
No, it's such a good show. It's like six seasons. Similarly, her body is only discovered when a maintenance worker is called to the house to address a water pressure issue. In Hong Kong, from which Elisa's family has immigrated to Vancouver, filmmakers were also inspired by the case. Hungry Ghost Ritual.
Oh, okay.
A horror thriller that includes a scene in which a ghost terrorizes a young woman in an elevator. It's shot to look just like the security camera footage and is believed to be inspired by her security footage. Okay, in 2019, the studio ACKK, creators of the video game Y2K, a postmodern RPG, which I don't know what an RPG is, mentioned Eliza's death. This is... Okay, it's maybe bad. As an inspiration during a Reddit AMA, saying that, quote, her suffering was influential in the development of the game.
Wow, glad she could be of service, guys.
Yeah, the developers faced criticism for making use of elements of Elisa's death in a way that was perceived as exploitive. Yes.
Yep.
And then in 2014, a video for Vancouver's pop duo The Zolas, Ancient Mars, is meant to be an idealized representation of Elisa's last day, showing a young woman exploring Los Angeles and taking in simple pleasures. Quote, it bugged me how tidily people explained away her disappearance with drugs or mental illness, said singer Zach Gray, who attended UBC around the same time and had a friend who actually knew Elisa. Quote, though it's mostly fiction, we wanted people to see it and feel like she was a real girl and a familiar girl, and she wasn't just a police report.
Wow.
Yeah. So in 2021, the Discovery Plus show Ghost Adventures will investigate her death.
I've seen it.
It's not 2021. It already came out.
That's stupid. Well, I've seen something that was like Ghost Hunters or something.
Ghost Adventures?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, I'll have to look it up.
I watched it.
Okay, so then I did not write it in here. There's one last thing. I have to tell you about it.
Tammy.
Okay, let me get to the Goog page. All right, so one of the last... This is really far-fetched, but this was one of the last theories.
Okay.
Originating in Korea, there's a thing called the elevator game. Have you heard about this?
No.
Okay, it's a ritual game that is said to give the player access to another world. So, I'll read you the rules. So this game is supposed, you follow these rules and apparently you're taken into like another world or dimension or whatever. And so people began to think that maybe she was actually playing this game and was like caught, like her body caught on video, but of her mind in this other place, which I don't believe it. But, like, you have to hear the rules and how to return and stuff. Okay, so how to play. I'm just going to read you the directions. just in case you ever want to play.
I don't think so.
No. Okay, one, find a building with at least 10 floors. Two, make sure to be alone and that no one else joins you in the elevator throughout this process. Otherwise, you must start over. Three, press the button to get to the fourth floor. Don't get out. Then, go to the second floor, then the sixth floor, then the second floor, then the 10th floor. Do not get out on any of these floors. Number four, then go to the fifth floor. There, a young woman could come into the elevator with you. Do not speak to or look at her, even though she may look familiar. Five, then press the first floor. Six, if you press to go to the first floor, but the elevator goes to the 10th floor, remain on the elevator. You're still in the game. Seven, if you press to go to the first floor, but the elevator does go to the first floor, then exit the moment the doors open. Do not speak or look back. Eight, once you reach the 10th floor, you can choose to get off or stay. If you choose to get off, the woman from step four may ask you a question and even call your name. Do not answer her. Nine, now you have reached the other world. To know for sure you are, the sign is that you... Nine. Okay. It's written so weird. Nine. Now you have reached the other world. To know that you are for sure there, you will be the only one there. You're the only person in this other world.
What?
Yeah. Okay. So apparently in this other world, it's like a replica of this exact world, except it's like completely dark. And all there is like a red cross. There's no one else there. And there's like... I'm going to use the word reports very loosely, that there's even instances of like being like disoriented, or like the closer you think you're getting to get back to the elevator to get you home, like you're walking towards it, but it seems to be getting further and further away. So how to return is, one, return to the exact elevator you came from and press the same order of buttons mentioned before finishing at the fifth floor. Like, don't lose your instruction pad. Two, once you're at the fifth floor, press the button to the first floor. However, this will cause the elevator to go to the 10th floor. So you must press any other floor button to stop it from going to the 10th floor before reaching there. Three, once you're on the first floor, make sure everything around you is all right. If something is not normal, remain in the elevator and repeat step two.
What? That is the most, like, horrifying
free,
like, what? Fucking person like sat there like, this is how we get to the other world.
And like, I hate this. Like, I do not like paranormal stuff. We've talked about this before. So I was like, I'm not even gonna like look into people who've like played this game. I don't want to read reports. I don't want to read made up stories. I don't want to know anything about it. But this like took over, that people really believed that she was playing this elevator game. And that was part of why she was acting disoriented, because like she was physically here, but mentally in the elevator game.
Wow.
Yep.
I kind of want to do it now.
Ew, no.
Ew. Let's go try it.
Ooh, I don't like elevators anyways. That, like, I don't hate them, but like, I don't know. I'm always afraid they're just going to get stuck, or like, it's going to be a murderer, and like, I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what happens when you're like true crime obsessed with things. So, in the end, TV, video games, and music got their hands on the story and benefited from her tragic death, but sadly her family is no closer to answers on what happened to their daughter. Was it drugs, a psychotic break, an accident? Who knows? There may be yet another killer connected to the Cecil Hotel roaming the streets, still carrying a story that has caused obsession and speculation all over the world. And that is the story of Elisa Lam.
Thanks so much.
Yep.
Wow.
There were other people, I think I talked about it a little bit in the beginning, who thought that it was suicide. But again, like getting the lid back onto the water tank.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy for that to happen. And also, there are other ways to go about that that would be more simple than
right
all of that. But also, if she was like manic and had a psychotic break of sorts, like none of it had to make any sense.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's tragic no matter what.
I know.
She was really young, right? How old was she?
Yeah.
Oh, 1991. So she was Allison's age.
22. She was 21. I think she was turning 22 that year.
Okay.
Yep. So yeah, she was really young.
Wow.
I know. Sam. And I don't know what her personality was. Like, yes, the very first weird thing is like, and maybe it's not weird. Maybe I'm just not familiar with taking solo trips.
No, not me.
Like, that seems really strange to me. I don't know. Maybe it's like a find yourself kind of thing. Maybe people will do this.
I call you to go to Target with me.
I know.
Like, maybe I'm just codependent. I'm just clingy.
Like, we talk to each other while we're, like, on the pot.
Yeah, like, literally.
On like... the phone. Just deal with the echo. You know where I'm at.
Like... if you hear any noises, just be nice. Carry the conversation. Don't stop talking.
Like, I don't even try to, like, step out of the bathroom and flush. I'm just, like, I'm just flushing and leaving. No, she was definitely either in the middle of something weird or was totally not codependent at all. Was super independent to go do something really big like that.
Yeah.
So, that was my story.
Wow.
Yep.
So, I was doing this yesterday, trying to see if I still had any arm muscles, which I really don't. Uh-huh. Pretty much gone.
Wow.
And I looked at this mole, and I had a big-ass, wiry black hair. And it was like the kind that, like, you get divorced over. It was like, oh, hell no. Like, he would never touch me again. Oh. And you know those, like, thick.
Yeah.
Oh, it was
long. It's a mole hair.
It was long. I was like, what the fuck?
It's on the back of your arm.
I can't, like, see that part of my arm. Like, I had to, like, twist on my arm meat to get to it.
Better your arm than your nipple, you know?
Ew. No, thank God you don't have that. Yeah, it was horrifying. I was like, oh, shit.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed it before?
Mm-mm.
How long's that hair been there? I'm sorry, I was a bad friend.
It was like...
If it's any help, I've seen you in all kinds of clothing and not clothing, and I've never noticed your wiry black hair.
Maybe it's a Corona edition.
Maybe. It's like, could the world get worse? Yes, it could. I could start growing hairs.
That was shitty. Let's add an arm hair. Let's add a mole hair.
Not just any hair.
Like, can't let December be too easy. Come on. Oh,
that's beautiful.
I thought you would enjoy that. We are just going to jump right into it.
Jump.
I don't have, like, a fantastic intro, so. Okay. Didn't even give it a name.
We could do it. All ready, go. Nope. Didn't work.
It was close.
Death row doozy.
Death row doozy.
Oh, is that inappropriate?
I don't know.
Okay.
What? Who are you? This is normally me.
I don't know. It just came out of my mouth. I feel bad.
I like it. That's okay. The name now.
All right.
You did it.
I did it.
Okay. So, Todd, he was 26, and his wife, Stacy Bagley, she was 28, were youth ministers from Iowa. They were visiting Killeen, Texas, to attend a revival meeting at their former church in the summer of 1999.
Wait, can we talk about that? How that's my neighbor city?
You
Where I grew up?
You probably know about this. 1999?
I don't know, but Killeen is shady as hell.
Is it?
Yeah.
Makes sense. So before moving to Iowa, they were from Fort Hood, like the surrounding area. I think she was from like Killeen and he was stationed at Fort Hood.
Also shady as hell.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Still ongoing.
Yes.
Shadiness coming out of there. The couple attended Grace Christian Church and they found their calling in working with kids there. So they had been married for 3 years. What?
It's just all like so familiar. Like that's like, you know where the, like, I know where these places are.
Yeah.
I didn't... Okay, go. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, so they'd been married for 3 years, and Todd got an opportunity in Iowa. They transferred. They were considering moving back to Killeen, because that's where, like, all their family and friends and stuff were. So they were in town for the church thing.
Is it going to rain?
Sometimes you just, like, have to, like, make sure, like, we're still happy.
Your boobs are still there?
Don't want to, like, wake up and they're back down to my belly button. June 20th of 1999, 19-year-old Christopher Andre Vialva and minors Christopher Lewis, who was 17, and Tony Sparks, who was 16, all members of a gang, met to plan a robbery. That night, armed with Sparks' .22 caliber handgun, they went out looking for a victim. Around 2 a.m., the teens caught the attention of a police officer. They were able to quickly just throw the gun into bushes that were by them. But the officer took Sparks and Lewis back to the police station because they were juveniles and were in violation of the Killeen juvenile curfew law. Like, that's how you know Killeen is shady. Like,
oh, you all need to go home at sundown.
No, no, no. So Sparks' mom picked them all up, and then later that day, so now June 21st, like, mm-hmm. in that day, Viava went back to where they were and got the gun back from the bushes. So now we're at June 21st. It's the very next day. The Bagleys attended a church service before having lunch with friends. After lunch, they stopped at a convenience store to use a payphone, where they unfortunately were approached by the group of young men we just discussed, and they were asked for a ride to Vialva's uncle's house. Todd and Stacy agreed to help and allowed Viava, Lewis, and Sparks into their car. All right, so once they got into the car, the Bagleys were up front. The three guys got into the back seat. They started out fine. Viava was giving Todd directions, and then abruptly he pulled out his .40 caliber gun, pointed it at Todd, and told him the plans had changed. Ooh. At the same time, Sparks pointed the .22 handgun at Stacy. On Viava's orders, the Bagleys got out of the car. The gang stole Todd's wallet, Stacy's purse, and their jewelry. Viava demanded the PIN code for their debit card and then forced the Bagleys into the trunk of the car. After locking the Bagleys in the trunk, Viava drove around for several hours. He went to an ATM machine to withdraw money from their bank account, but was pissed when he found out they had less than $100. Viava then drove to Wendy's, and they got lunch because, you know,
the Frosty was needed.
Robin makes you hungry.
Yeah.
So
I feel like so many criminals do weird stuff like that.
Right?
Yeah. Just no remorse for what they're doing.
After eating, they pawned Stacy's wedding ring, and then they went and bought cigarettes. You know, just...
Yeah. It's a bad habit. Robbing and smoking.
Well, it said cigars and cigarettes, so it might have been...
Cigarillos. Swish yeah, like sweet.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Don't be stereotypical. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I've never walked in a parking lot where there's not a pack of smushed Swisher sweets.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Okay. So through this terrifying experience, the Bagleys reportedly witnessed to Lewis and Sparks asking them about their belief in God and begging for their lives. The Bagleys told Lewis and Sparks that they were not wealthy people, but that they were blessed by their faith in Jesus. The Bagleys informed Lewis and Sparks about the revival meeting at Grace Christian, a church which Lewis said he had attended. Urging them to have faith, the Bagleys advised Lewis and Sparks that God's blessing were available to anyone. After this conversation, Sparks told Viava he no longer wanted to go through with the crime. Viava, however, insisted on killing the Bagleys and burning their car to eliminate the witnesses and the gang's fingerprints. Viava drove to his house. While he was inside, the Bagleys had another conversation about God with Lewis and Sparks. By this time, the victims had been locked in the trunk for several hours. The Bagleys pleaded with Lewis and Sparks for their lives. Viava returned to the car with a ski mask and some additional clothing.
It's a little late for a ski mask.
Right? Okay. At this point, Sparks told the others that he needed to be taken to his house because his 8 p.m. curfew was approaching. He told them that because they had just gotten taken in last night mm-hmm. to the police station, that his mom would be super pissed if he violated that order again.
Or, like, robbed and killed people.
So he's like, hey, guys.
Yeah.
This is fun.
I gotta go home now.
I'm enjoying the bonding, but I have to go now. So, curfew. The group dropped off Sparks at his house. Sparks took the Bagley's jewelry with him, and Viava told Sparks they could pawn the jewelry together the next day. Viava also told Sparks to leave his .22 handgun with him. He didn't want to at first, but he agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Viava was, like, super friendly, so I'm sure he was, like...
Sounds terrifying.
Asking wasn't super nice.
I don't know that he asked anything.
Right. At this point, Viava decided that they needed help and called fellow gang members Brandon Bernard and Terrell Brown. Bernard and Brown went off to go buy fuel to burn the car. Vialva, Bernard, Lewis, and Brown drove to an isolated spot in the Belton Lake Recreation Area on the Fort Hood Military Reservation. Vialva parked the Bagley's car on top of a little hill. Brown and Bernard poured lighter fluid on the interior of the car while the Bagleys sang and prayed in the trunk. According to Brown, Stacy's last words were, "Jesus loves you," and "Jesus, take care of us." Vialva cussed at her, put on his mask, and then told Lewis to open the trunk. He then shot Todd in the head, and that killed him instantly. He shot Stacy in the right side of her face, and that knocked her unconscious, but didn't kill her.
Oh, no.
He then told Bernard to set the car on fire. An autopsy later revealed that Stacy died from smoke inhalation and not the gunshot.
But I hope she was unconscious.
Yeah, she was not unconscious.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. Vialva, Bernard, Lewis, and Brown ran down the hill to Bernard's car. Their getaway was screwed up because the car slid off the road into a muddy ditch. Local law enforcement officers were called to the scene because of the fire. When they got there, they saw the assailants trying to push the car out of the ditch. The firemen went to put out the fire and, like, investigate and make sure no one was in there. They found the bodies, and so all four of them were arrested right there.
Like, why wouldn't you just leave the car?
Right?
Like, there's... You killed people and lit a car on fire. Like, leave the car in the ditch.
It's on fire. Like, don't worry about the ditch. You're good.
Also, like, don't kill people, but also... Which, the Belton Lake Recreation Area...
Do you know where that is?
Yeah. So, there's... It's like a whole... We used to go to the Belton Lakes, and, like, that area, if I'm not mistaken... I don't know why it's called Blora. It's B-L-O-R-A. But I'm pretty sure that's the same thing out there. It's also weird and creepy. What year was that?
1999.
Yeah. Well, I guess I was in middle school. We used to go out there in high school, so... Anyway, it's creepy.
That is creepy.
Yes.
About 2 weeks later, while police were executing an unrelated search warrant at Sparks' house, they found the Bagley's jewelry, so Sparks was taken into custody with them.
Like, what the hell are you doing with your life that cops are just like, gotta do a search of this guy's house. Like,
oh, there's 16.
Yes.
What is happening? I mean, he was in a gang, so
it's not true. He was living,
like, a fantastic up-and-up life. Sparks has been in custody since August 2nd, 1999. On April 17th, 2000, Sparks pleaded guilty to carjacking. On July 31st, 2000, while imprisoned at the Bell County Juvenile Detention Center awaiting sentencing, Sparks participated in an escape attempt with another inmate, Christopher Kirvin. Kirvin lured a correctional officer into Kirvin's cell and choked her and took her keys. She regained consciousness and began screaming. At that point, Sparks, in an adjacent cell, began flushing his toilet repeatedly to mask her screams.
Hmm. Nice. Loud kid. Toilets.
Yeah, apparently it didn't work.
Stupid.
You dumbass. Because the murders were committed on Fort Hood, the teens were tried in federal court. On June 13th, 2000, Christopher Vialva and Brandon Bernard were found guilty of carjacking, first-degree murder on a government reservation, aiding and abetting, and conspiracy to commit murder. The jury voted for both to receive the death penalty. They were tried together. Like, that seems really strange to me.
Yeah, like, that's not a common thing, right?
I mean, it is kind of common in some crimes, but...
But those are completely separate. Like, one was a...
Yeah, one showed up.
Yeah, and one did, like,
one was everything. Yeah. Yeah, you would think that they wouldn't be tried together, but they were. So they both got the death penalty. Lewis and Brown testified at the trial of Vialva and Bernard. As a result of their cooperation, Lewis and Brown signed plea agreements whereby they pleaded guilty to 2 counts of second-degree murder, aiding and abetting, 1 count of carjacking, and possession of a firearm during the commission of a crime of violence. The district court sentenced both Lewis and Brown to 248 months, which is like 20 years in prison.
Okay.
They're both already out.
Oh, wasn't that big of a deal, was it?
Charming little rats. Oh my gosh. What am I saying? Little rats? Like, no, that's good. They did bad things. You should help the police.
Yeah.
Like, my inner thug comes out. Like, this Snitches get stitches, bitch. What?
That's like it's real hood, everybody.
Who am I? The things I just say.
It's the wine. Just look, I'm pouring it left-handed on your white bed.
Wine.
I don't know. I'm a risk taker. Okay. Got it.
On March 22nd, 2001, Sparks was sentenced to life in prison. But in 2018, his sentence was reduced to 35 years, followed by a 5-year supervised release term. So he's going to be out in 2030. Hmm. After 20 years on death row, Christopher Villalba released a video on September 15th, 2020, 10 days before his scheduled execution, pleading for a stay of execution. In the video, Christopher stated, "I'm not making this plea as an innocent man, but I'm a changed and redeemed man. I committed a great wrong when I was a lost kid, and I took two precious lives from this world. I'm not the stupid kid I was on the day I made the most desperate and tragic decision of my life." His request for a stay of execution was denied on September 18th, 2020. Villalba was executed September 24th at the federal penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana. I meant to look up how to say that.
That was in another one of our... That was in another one of our podcasts because we were like, Terre Haute? Terre Haute? It's H-A-U-T-E, right? Is it?
Yes, yes.
Yes, and we had a whole conversation like, I don't know how to say that. It's one of these.
They have some bad people there.
Apparently so.
In his final words, Christopher asked God to comfort Todd and Stacy's families, saying, "Father, heal their hearts with grace and love. I'm ready, Father." He was the 8th person to be executed this year after 17 years without a federal execution carried out. It's also very strange for a president right before they leave office to start doing big things like this. Mm-hmm. Like normally, I don't remember what they call it, but normally they pretty much just do nothing at the very end of their term because they know they're like,
yeah,
they're done.
Yeah.
But Trump's obviously not doing that. He's actually, there's, he's like making a huge push. There's going to be a bunch more executions before the end of the year.
Okay. Is that like a known thing that the president has shit to do with the executions?
Well, like.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, I guess I don't really know how to explain that.
I thought that it was always like up to the penitentiary for some reason.
There was some kind of stay. Like they were talking about like the morality of executions, I guess. And so it's been just kind of like on pause for 17 years. And then Trump like went ahead and greenlit it.
Oh, interesting.
Well, he's like pissed at America to that degree.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like, yeah, y'all done piss me off.
Which, I mean, we live near Huntsville, so.
Kim Kardashian has been working with President Trump since 2018 on prison reform and assisted in the passing of the bipartisan First Step Act. That's, do you know what that is?
No.
So it's a criminal justice reform bill that tries to reduce. Oh, God.
Okay. And take three.
I really have not one glass of wine. What is wrong with my brain?
Do you have any to the clapper?
My brain. It's good. Okay, thank you.
That was the clapper for you to go.
It's like you're having a stroke. You're like,
do you know my heart issues?
Oh, not a funny joke. Just kidding. Okay.
First, tell me what that bill is.
First Step is a criminal justice reform bill that aims to reduce terms for nonviolent offenses and improve conditions in U.S. penal facilities.
I know I can't ever say that word either. Those penile facilities.
We're like middle school boys. What's wrong with me? Kardashian has made public requests to President Trump about Brandon Bernard, as well as use social media to encourage others to speak out in protest, but President Trump has denied her request to grant him a stay of execution.
Okay, wait. So that's not a non-violent violent offender, though. So, like, why is she fighting so hard for him?
She doesn't... It's not only violent offenders. Like, she also... I think there's been other, like, federal, like, murder cases like this that she's helped, like, convert into, like, life.
Like, what is it about him? Do you know, like, why she's fighting so hard for him?
Yeah, it's a huge, big push thing. Let me finish all of this.
Okay.
And then I'll kind of tell you, like, why. Because I'm going to tell you all these people that are, like,
okay,
in outrage. So, from his trial, do you have 11 or 12 jurors? 12? Yeah, 12 angry men. 12.
Yes.
Shut up. You had to think about it, too.
I didn't know. I was saying, like, yeah, why would I not know that?
Right. Like, duh.
Okay. Because a hung jury is, like, okay, yes.
So, of the original 12, 9 are still alive. Of those 9, 5 of them have now publicly said that they regret their decision, that they want him to get a stay of execution and just serve life.
I mean, because he probably thought she was dead, right? Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. Okay. It's fine. Yes. Angela Moore, who represented the government in prosecution of Bernard and Viava's cases, is now against the death penalty. She's become a public defender and has publicly spoken out against Bernard being executed because he was only 18 at the time he committed the crime, so his brain wasn't fully developed. She said, and I quote, "Executing Brandon would be a terrible stain on the nation's honor."
Oh.
Mm-hmm. There are mass protests that started yesterday and went through today advocating for Bernard, being led by the anti-death penalty group Death Penalty Action. A spokesperson for the group said its members overwhelmed the White House switchboard yesterday with polite requests for the president to show mercy to Brandon. Today they were out at noon, cordoning off the Department of Justice's office building as a crime scene using yellow tape.
Oh, why do I not know about this group? Why am I not part of it? Oh, joining it.
So, that's pretty much like the whole, you know, backstory to it. The main things that people are really protesting is, one, his age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, like, the 17-year-old that was involved, he didn't get the death penalty. He's already actually out living a normal life. So it's, like, so a matter of months.
And he was charged with the same thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No. No, because he helped them, because he, like, turned witness or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So he also kind of got, like, a deal. But they're saying, like, just to say, because you're 18... You know, so now you're an adult. Like, that's not really appropriate. They've done so many more studies since the 90s on, like, brain development and all that. Like, you know, you and I always talk about, like, frontal lobe. Yeah. So they're saying, like, he really shouldn't be held accountable for that. But also, even more important to think about in this story is that he showed up after. Like, they'd already abducted them. They had already robbed them. They had already done all of this stuff, and he was called in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Villalva is the one who shot both of them. Bernard thought they were dead.
Yeah.
So then he lit the car on fire to get rid of the evidence. The only reason he got the death penalty is because it turned out that that's what killed her. But it wasn't like he was trying to kill her.
Yeah.
You know, like...
No, I agree.
It's so hard.
It is, because, like, I might not agree, like...
Obviously, he should serve...
Like, he did murder her, technically, yes.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you and I always talk about with our kids, like, you get what the company that you are with gets, but again, he's not necessarily getting that treatment either.
Right. It's so tricky.
It is.
So, after 20 years sitting on death row, they just got the notice in November that he had an execution date finally, and it was for today. So that was why I chose that case.
Wait, they're doing it tonight?
It was supposed to be at 6 o'clock. That's why I keep checking my phone. They're giving.
Well, I thought they just like released that information. I didn't know they were still going to do it.
No, so the last update from that journalist who's there, and this was 19 minutes ago, said execution is expected to begin momentarily. The next word we'll hear likely will be a time of death once the media witnesses return to the media center.
Oh, that makes me really sad.
It's really sad when you think about what's going on right now.
Yeah, I don't like that. Yeah, that makes me really sad for him.
I know.
And his, I don't know, wife or girlfriend or whatever. We said he has 2 kids that visit him.
Yeah, I think he has a wife.
That's sad.
Kim Kardashian said he has a wife.
I can't believe she's so smart.
I know. She's
That's impressive. But she is super smart. It's...
I know.
A pleasant surprise.
Yeah. Like, oh, you don't just have a big ass. There's actually, like, a brain up there. That's cool.
Maybe her brain is in her ass, and that's why it's so big.
Stop. That makes so much sense.
She's just hiding it.
So 30 minutes. This is 30 minutes before his execution time.
Mm-hmm.
This is breaking news from one of the legal reporters that was on the site. It says, attorneys Alan Dershowitz and Ken Starr have joined the legal defense team to save Brandon Bernard from being executed. They are petitioning the U.S. Supreme Court to stay the execution for 14 days. The execution is scheduled for 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 30 minutes from now. Then Kim Kardashian posted right before 6 o'clock. Just spoke to Brandon for what will likely be the last time. Hardest call I've ever had. Brandon, selfless as always, was focused on his family and making sure they're okay. He told me not to cry because our fight isn't over. When he told me he's claustrophobic and they offered to give him a shot of sedative to calm him down before they put him in the chair and he just didn't want to panic, I literally lost it. I had to mute my phone so he wouldn't hear me cry like that. We didn't say goodbye because we wanted to be hopeful that we would talk again. We said talk to you soon.
That's so sad.
It's just... Okay.
So, like, for the record, because I know you told me, but not everybody knows, you said he does have children from, like, conjugal visits.
Yes. So I don't know the full details on it, but he has a wife and he has two daughters. He has never actually touched his daughters. They've only ever seen him behind the glass, like, visiting partitions. Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So this was posted at 6:19 p.m. tonight. So that's almost 20 minutes after his execution mm-hmm. time. Justin, D.C. Circuit, just voted 5-4 to deny stay to two federal death row inmates scheduled for execution, Brandon Bernard tonight and Alfred Bourgeoisie tomorrow. Clinton appointee Rogers joined four GOP-appointed judges in denying the stay document. So this is just another update. So this is also at 6 o'clock, and this is another reporter who's there
mm-hmm.
at the prison. Says, the clock strikes 6, which was the official execution time for Brandon Bernard. We witnesses are still at a media center. Haven't been told if we'll be taken to the death chambers across the Terre Haute prison. If it's still on, the execution won't start until witnesses are in place. So they're just sitting there waiting all night tonight. And then they released the statement. It says, attorney statement, execution of Brandon Bernard. Tonight, after Dershowitz joined the team, after they filed a last-minute appeal 30 minutes before the execution time, they did deny it, and he was executed tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to read the statement made by his attorney afterwards announcing it. Tonight, those of us who love Brandon Bernard, and we are many, are full of righteous anger and deep sadness at the actions of the federal government in taking his life. Brandon's life mattered. To us, his legal team, to his two beautiful and talented daughters, to his mother, brother, and sister, and to the countless people around the country who came to know him and his story in recent weeks. Brandon made one terrible mistake at age 18, but he did not kill anyone, and he never stopped feeling shame and profound remorse for his actions in the crime that took the lives of Todd and Stacy Bagley. And he spent the rest of his life sincerely trying to show, as he put it, that he was not that person. Brandon showed us that and so much more, carrying himself with grace and generosity and always treating everyone around him with kindness and respect. He worked to help troubled kids avoid similar devastating mistakes and lived every day his commitment to serving both God and humanity. Many things went wrong to put Brandon on death row, including egregious government misconduct in concealing evidence and misleading the jury, which the courts refused to remedy. Before Brandon's execution, 5 of the jurors who sentenced him to death said they no longer stood by that verdict. They joined the lead appellate prosecutor on Brandon's case in urging President Trump to commute his death sentence to life without parole. Those plans for clemency were joined by hundreds of thousands of supporters, including celebrities, faith leaders, and members of the United States Congress. Brandon's execution is a stain on America's criminal justice system, but I pray that even in his death,
Brandon will advance his commitment to helping others by moving us closer to a time when this country does not pointedly and maliciously kill young black men who pose no threat to anyone. When we hold prosecutors to the higher standards of integrity in every case, and when our leaders exercise their moral authority where it is needed. We were proud to call Brandon our client and our friend, and will miss him greatly. Robert C. Owen. It's December 10th.
It's so sad sounding. Like, obviously... Oh, it's such a hard... Well, okay. First of all, you know I don't do the death penalty thing anyways, but... Even so, like, it sounds like he's not that person. Uh-uh. Like, he's not. Like, people really loved him. Like, he used the remainder of his life, like, fighting for good.
Right. He actually, it's not in this, he actually spent quite a bit of his time while in prison. He worked on, like, a program for kids, like, not like that scared straight kind of thing, mm-hmm. but like that, like, speaking to them, yeah. I guess, like, while he was in prison. Like,
don't make this your life.
Yeah, like, look yeah. at this. I answered a call mm-hmm. from, like, an associate, you know, from
And somebody. I lit a car on fire.
And... Right, and now I'm going to die.
Yes.
So I have his last words. They've been released. Mm. You okay?
No, I hate this.
I know.
It makes me really sad.
I know. Says... Brandon Bernard directed his last words to the family of the couple he killed, speaking with striking calm. "I'm sorry," he said. "That's the only words that I can say that completely capture how I feel now and how I felt that day." So that's...
What's that?
All right, I'm going to read you... there are two letters, one from Todd's family, one from Stacy's family, his victims. Mm-hmm. This was after his execution. They wrote these. And I guess it is kind of an important, you know, as sad as this is, you know, for Brandon, like, I guess you do have to see both sides, but...
Sure.
Says...
I wish that these were probably being addressed to Dickface, the other one, but...
He's in the first line.
Oh, good.
But not... Okay. Oh, I know who you're talking about now. Never mind.
The Yale...
Whatever. No. I just thought you meant your favorite person. Anyway.
Oh, that one. Listen, we try not to get political, but that has to stay in. Okay, I needed a laugh before this. Okay.
Okay, it says, the family of Todd Bagley would like to thank President Donald J. Trump. Britain's a different name for him. Attorney General William H. Barr and the Department of Justice. Without this process, my family and I would not have the closure needed to move on in life. It has been very difficult to wait 21 years for the sentence that was imposed by the judge and jury on those who cruelly participated in the destruction of our children to be finally completed. The local news gave one of my statements, and I appreciated the way they presented my quote. When someone deliberately takes the lives of others, they suffer the consequences of their actions. This senseless act of unnecessary violence was premeditated and had many opportunities to be stopped at any time during a 9-hour period. This was torture as they pleaded for their lives from the trunk of their own car. Please remember that the lives of family and friends were shattered, and we have all grieved for 21 years waiting for justice to finally be served. Thank you to all who were involved in this process of getting justice for Todd and Stacy. That was written by Georgia A. Bagley, family and friends. And there's one more. On June 21st, 1999, our lives were changed forever because this is the day that Todd and Stacy were executed. Todd and Stacy were full of life, in love, and proudly served the Lord as Christian youth ministers. Even after being forced into the trunk of their car at gunpoint and driven around for over 7 hours, Todd and Stacy still managed to provide the plan of salvation to their attackers until they were shot and burned beyond recognition. Stacy still had the chance of survival until the car was set on fire. Romans 10:9 says, "If you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you'll be saved." I pray that Brandon has accepted Christ as his Savior, because if he has, Todd and Stacy will welcome him into heaven with love and forgiveness. God will forgive us of our sins, but the consequences of our sin will always play out. My family would like to thank President Donald Trump, Attorney General William Barr, Assistant U.S. Attorney Mark Frazier, Warden Tom Watson, Warden Brian Lammer, and the Terre Haute Crisis Support Team.
That was from Charles Woodard, Family and Friends.
It's almost like so... It's like you hear, like, what they're saying, and then you, like, try to place yourself in the position to, like, lose someone that's really close to you, and how you think you would feel, like, then as, like, a bystander, it feels completely different.
I seriously went through such a wave of emotions, because...
Like, researching?
Yeah, I went back and forth on this case, mainly because it's, like, I want to live in a world where people are, not people, I want to live in a world where people are afraid to kill people. Like, I want there to be a consequence that is like, shit, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no matter what, that's not on the table. And like, you know, I do, like, you know, just like when you have to spank your kid, you're like, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like, he's 3 and he's going to do really bad things unless I, like, impress upon him how serious it is if he does it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like what I always tell myself about, like, disciplining like that, you know? It's like, no, I'm not, like, getting revenge or being angry. It's like I'm setting a precedent. Like, if you do that, that is so bad that this is going to happen, like, don't do it.
Yeah, but isn't that also, like, I guess that's the problem, like, is that that's what prison is. Like, that is the consequence. And to me, like, the death penalty is revenge. And so that's why I have a hard time, which I know a lot of people don't see it that way. And that's okay, too. That's just why I'm so against it. And because I just believe that, like, that he maybe really is a change. Like, you don't get another trial for who you've become 20 years later, or for the people who don't believe that the evidence that they were provided was what they needed to make this huge monumental decision for this man's life. Like,
right.
That seems really bizarre and backwards to me that so many people have come forward and been like, no, that was bullshit. Like, we weren't given the details.
Yeah. But so they went through years of appeals, and every time the courts would be like, that wouldn't have changed the outcome. Like, that was inconsequential. Like,
but it might've changed the outcome of if they decided on death or life in prison.
Yeah, maybe. So, like, some of the things that they disputed were, like, they all had bad home lives. Like, yeah, they're teenagers in a gang. We know they have a bad home life.
That's,
like,
how they end up in gangs.
Yeah, that's obvious. That's mm-hmm. awful. You know, but it's, like, the dad was, like, homeless. Like, his dad was, like, homeless or something, so he was, like, exposed to more stuff. Like, didn't have a father figure. That's not, I don't know. It's just, it's so tough because it's, like, It like, makes me really sad to think, to, like, put myself, like, in his shoes and to think, like, but if he wasn't, like, an actual, like, willing, active participant in murder and he just got the death penalty
mm-hmm.
because he thought she was dead and he was told by the ringleader to burn the car
yeah,
to get rid of the evidence, and, like, it turned out that she was still alive.
So, fun fact, I'll say acquaintance because we weren't friends. It was definitely an acquaintance kind of thing.
With a murderer?
Well, okay.
Whoa.
So I dated a guy.
A murderer?
He's in prison right now. This was in 6th grade. And it happened like 3 years later. But no, this is another guy that I knew and was like acquaintances with. And he actually drove a like... truck holding people that had been murdered because his life was threatened, and like was told, if you don't help me get rid of these bodies, then I'm going to kill you.
Oh my God.
So like, who knows what the conversation was to like get him to come out and participate in this, or like, what is the gang life kind of threat? Like, if he didn't come, what would be his consequence? Like, what played into him?
Yeah.
Making the choice to actually come out there and do this, which, for the record, the guy I know, I think he's out of jail. I don't actually know that he ever went. Maybe for a little bit. And he drove around in a car with dead people. So, it's just like, there's never a fair...
Yeah.
It's never fair. Just like drug charges and rapists getting out when people with marijuana charges are sitting behind bars. Like, it's just not a fair system.
It's not. And it's also kind of cool because, like, I definitely went through, like, a Kardashian obsession
mm-hmm. in high school. KK's mad right now.
It's sad. It's cool, though, that she sees things without being just, like, you know, hashtag woke. Like, I'm so sick of that shit.
Yeah, and she's not just, like, a rich bitch, like, sitting behind the scenes.
Yeah, and she's not, but she's not just, like, stirring shit up. She's, like, really she's watching doing the these work. Cases, and she's like, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, he was 18. Because, I'm sorry, if you're 18 and you choose to murder somebody, like, you made the choice, like, you know, mm-hmm. like, lay in your bed. Whatever the charges are, like, you did it. You deserve mm-hmm. it. But it's like, well, he got a death penalty charge, probably because he shared a trial for some reason mm-hmm. with the actual murderer, you know, and that unfortunately the autopsy showed, like, if they hadn't done an autopsy, why would he get the death penalty? Like, he didn't try
to... Yeah, because the other guy would have been charged with both murders.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, because it's like, no, he shot them both in the head. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no reason to believe she was still alive, and, like, it just doesn't give me the sense that he was there to kill them.
Yeah, because then what would that be called? Tampering with evidence? I mean, like, that's... Is that what that would have been?
Wait, if what?
If they had both died and he burned the car.
He would have been accomplice after the fact.
Oh, okay.
So he was
Which still, would have been a much lesser charge.
Well, that's what everybody else was. And, like, two of them yes. were already out and one got 35 years. And that was partly because he also, like, helped somebody assault a police officer inside prison.
So how do they know who... Did they confess to who?
Yeah, they all of them gave testimonies of what happened. And so everybody said that Bernard... Actually, that what there was one story that I read that said that they didn't even, like... That he didn't even light the fire. But I think everybody else said, mm-hmm. including him, that he did do it. Like, I don't think he ever disputed that part.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you go back and look at, like, the Innocence Project and stuff like that, like, this shit happens all the time.
So I had this friend, and when her dad, I think, was a teenager, or, like, maybe 21, he was at a bar with his best friend, and they got in a fight, and were just, like, arguing, and he grabbed his knife and stabbed his friend in the leg, but he hit a major the femoral artery. Yes, and his friend bled out and died at the bar.
Oh, my gosh!
And he went to prison. And he went to, he served, like, I think 20 or 30 years in federal prison.
He thought he was just stabbing him in the leg.
Yeah. Which also, like, don't stab your friend.
No, but his but intent, like, was not to murder
the guy. Yeah, but he was never trying to kill his friend. And he just happened to hit the artery.
Wow.
And his friend just bled out and died. And, like, he tried to save him, like, when it happened. We were, like, good friends.
That's so sad.
But it's just, like, it's just one of those, like, you just never think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, little tiny actions can have huge consequences.
That's what I think about, like, the texting and driving thing.
Yes!
Like, you know, here, like, on our main road that we won't name so people don't know where our houses are?
Don't stop me.
People ride their bikes on that, like, 6-inch shoulder.
Yeah. All you have time. To do is glance down at your phone yes. like, half a second.
And then you've murdered somebody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or it's like, the kids think I'm so mean. Because, you know, like, Peyton wants to sit in the front seat sometimes, like, to go to school. I'm mm-hmm. like, absolutely not.
Never.
Or, like, Hudson yesterday, we had to go back up to pick up Peyton from coding club. And so Hudson, you know, was in the front seat, and he didn't want to put his seatbelt on. You know, because the school is, like,
yeah.
5 seconds away. And I was like, absolutely not. And he was like, ugh. He's like, you're so uptight. I'm like, do you know how long it takes to get in a wreck? And if you don't have a seatbelt on, you're going through the windshield.
Okay, don't quote me. We need to Google it. But I want to say, like, an yeah. unbelievably high amount of accidents happen within a mile
yeah.
of your home.
Mm-hmm. Because everybody's so, like...
Yeah.
We're almost home. Yep, exactly. Everyone's just, like, relaxed. Like, oh, I can't wait to get home.
And, yeah.
Yeah, nope.
Take my bra off.
5 seconds of bad decisions can change your whole life.
Yeah. Clearly.
I wonder if, like, somewhere, like, in our evolution, it was like,
we need one set and then we need
y'all
another
need a practice round so you, like, figure your shit out and then we'll give you the ones.
Not baby teeth, it's the practice round.
It's your starter set. Like, learn.
That Floss. Is so smart.
I'm gonna write a book. Don't worry. I got it.